Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, July 5th, 2019. Pro-Democracy Alliance and the leaders of Sudan's Transitional Military Council agree on how to form a new government.
We feel very honored to have been part of this process. This is the beginning of a new chapter in the history of the Sudan towards a peaceful, democratic system where the transition will witness also an inclusive process.
And the World Health Organization says there is no Ebola in South Sudan.
So far, there's no Ebola in South Sudan. That it is still safe to go around your business as usual, to travel in and out of the country as according to your plans. But of course, there's a need also to remain vigilant.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's Transitional Military Council and opposition leaders have agreed to share power in a transitional government that will last for 3 years. The two parties also agreed to have a rotated leadership of a sovereign council. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
The military and the opposition alliance agreed to share leadership of the government and contribute 5 members from each side to the sovereign council. Civilians will lead the council of ministers. The agreement also delayed the formation of the legislature until the transitional government is formed. Under the deal, the opposition will get 67% of the seats. Muhammad Al-Hassan Labat, the African Union special envoy to Sudan, who helped mediate the talks, says the two sides agreed to form an independent and transparent investigation committee to investigate the deaths of more than 100 protesters during the bloody crackdown on June 3rd and bring the perpetrators to justice. Another mediator, Mahmoud Direr, the Ethiopian special envoy to Sudan, praised the military council and opposition for reaching the compromise deal. He says the Sudanese people deserve to witness a genuine democratic transformation.
This is a moment of joy for the people of the Sudan, and in fact, we feel very honored to have been part of this process. This is the beginning of a new chapter in the history of the Sudan towards a peaceful, democratic system where the transition will witness also an inclusive process.
The Sudanese Deputy Head of Military Council, General Mohamed Hamdan Himeti, described the agreement as historic, saying it makes a new era in Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, Himeti thanked the African mediators and Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, the United States, and others for their efforts. The Sudanese military leader says no Sudanese will be left out during implementation of this agreement. Himeti says this agreement shall be inclusive and does not leave anyone behind. He says it carries all the ambitions of the Sudanese people and their revolution. Omar Diger, a member of the Sudanese Freedom and Change Coalition, says the deal opens new hope for political reforms in the country.
This is an opportunity to put the country forward and to move to the square of peace, freedom, justice, and all noble values.
Sudanese citizens celebrated in the streets upon hearing a deal was struck between the two sides. Dozens of citizens chanted slogans for civilians' rule, while others proudly waved the Sudanese flag. Others banged on plastic bottles. Khartoum resident Isra Daoud says, as a youth, she wants to see a real reforms in Sudan that helped build a new future for the next generation.
For me and the youth, we hope that we have like a democratic era for Sudan, and we hope that peace become a reality in this country. And we need to achieve many reforms in Sudan, political reforms, of course, economical reforms.
Opposition leaders here say the written agreement is expected to be signed within the next 48 hours. They say a prime minister could be announced within the next few days. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit, in Khartoum.
The African Union mediator overseeing the talks between Sudan's Transitional Military Council and the opposition coalition characterized the face-to-face talks as promising due to what he calls high level of a patriotic spirit among the various Sudanese leaders. Again, Michael Atit was at the venue of the talks and has this report for VOA from Khartoum.
Speaking to reporters last night at Corinthia Hotel, where the talks took place, the AU's Mohamed Labat says the first meeting was fruitful because both sides are committed to resolving the crisis once and for all.
The two delegations have had a responsible and honest dialogue amidst a high patriotic spirit and a great concern about the political situation in the country and the concerns of the Sudanese people.
Labat says they have included all the observations expressed by both sides in the proposal.
The two sides agreed to continue their face-to-face talks to discuss unresolved political issues. They also agreed to release all political prisoners who have linked with recent political incidents across Sudan.
More than 100 peaceful protesters were killed by Sudanese security forces during the June 3rd crackdown on the Khartoum sit-down outside army headquarters, according to opposition representatives and the Sudanese Doctors Association. Babikir Faisal, a member of the Freedom and Change Coalition, says the opposition wants the government to restore internet service across the country, which had been blocked since the crackdown.
We spoke about the independent inquiry on the killings of the protesters during the sit-in on June 3rd. We spoke also about the release of prisoners and the prisoners of war and the political detainees. Also, we talked about the negative campaign launched by the regime against the FFC on the government TV, the Sudan TV.
Faisal insists his hopeful solution will be reached soon.
If the TMC is ready and serious about reaching an agreement, this could be done in 1 hour. However, the experience has shown us that they usually say something and then they retreat from their positions and do it a lot in order to win time.
Abdul Hamid Awad, a Sudanese journalist working for Sudani Arabic Daily newspaper, has been following up the political situation in his country closely. He says the U-turn on the opposition's position is due to upcoming AU summit, which is going to focus more on Sudan. He says the opposition is afraid they will be blamed by African leaders.
The change of heart at this time is due to the expected African Union summit, which is coming ahead in the next few days. So they thought if they refuse to respond positively to the mediation at this time, it will be bad on them.
Before the June 3rd deadly crackdown, the two sides had agreed on a 3-year transitional period, the composition of a council of ministers, and the formation of legislature. For VOA News, I am Michael Atid in Khartoum, Sudan.
From Sudan, we move to South Sudan, where the Northern Leech State Governor apologized for blocking some lawmakers from the Transitional Legislative Assembly who visited Northern Leech to talk about the revitalized peace agreement. As Lasubo Memo reports for VOA from Juba, Governor Joseph Montuil was summoned to the National Assembly to explain his actions this week.
Lawmaker Fatuma Nyawang says Governor Montuil prevented her from traveling to see her constituents in May. Nyawang said in Parliament on Wednesday that some individuals working with Governor made threatening phone calls, speaking in Arabic to her so she would cancel her plans to travel to Northern Leech State from Juba.
I was receiving phone call from different places. Yahoo, I prove it after they cancel my name. His Excellency the Governor, the statement came from your office threatening my life. And these two people are here. I will not accept that. Because I was going to disseminate peace in my area, in my town, in my village, in my state.
During Wednesday's session, lawmakers accused Governor Montuil of violating lawmakers' rights to meet with their electorate as guaranteed by the Constitution. While some MPs suggested a vote of no confidence against Governor Montuil, most of them agreed that an apology delivered by the governor would suffice for his wrongdoing.
Most of you said that I should apologize to this August house. If she felt that I offended her in one way or another, and the other colleagues, Honorable Tabgarjir, all of them, their sons and daughters of my state, if please you felt that I obstructed you, knowingly or unknowingly, I apologize to you.
Natire Anna Grace is a lawmaker representing Kapoita State in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly.
Now they say you apologize for what? Why not tell you? I don't hate you personally, but I hate what you have done. Being a member here, you know how we feel. We know how we have been called rubber star. So you just want for us to say malice.
Peter Neal Koch from Mankien County, Northern Lee State, says he too was blocked from traveling to his constituency after boarding a plane from Juba. Neal embraced Montreal's apology.
We can accept the apology from the governor because he accepts what he has done. Then the parliament is already accept the apologies. Yes, we are aware of that.
Lawmaker Nyon Jangwan Loi, who says he was heading a delegation to Mankien when he was blocked from reaching the area, says it's good that the governor acknowledged his mistakes.
He's now online. You respect the law. You respect the National Assembly. That he has done that. But if he didn't accept that wrongdoing or wrong action that he has done, the assembly has also a role or another action that can take against him as a governor of the state.
Assembly Speaker Anthony Lino Makana praised the MPs for holding the governor to account and encouraged them to fight for their rights. According to the revitalized peace agreement, the parties are obliged to disseminate the peace deal to the grassroots population during the pre-transitional period, which expires in November. For VOA News, I am Nasuba Memo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, World Health Organization officials say there is no Ebola in South Sudan. Stay tuned for that story.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you resolve problems with your relatives?
We have to listen to all directions where the problem is coming from. We listen to different parties and then we come up with a solution to it, maybe through brainstorming.
For instance, one day we have conflict with my elder brother. He was dominating the property of the father. So what I did is that I have not to take him to the court or elsewhere, but best thing is to call the members of the relative, uncle, auntie, and the rest of the brothers, so that we come and discuss the issue, the misconvenience among us.
Dad will usually sit us down, get our opinions on certain issues that are affecting us, and then at the end of the day, that's when they'll make the decisions as parents.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of Yei River State are asking the state government to regulate the movement of civilians and soldiers across the common border with the Democratic Republic of Congo. A senior official at the state health ministry says health officials are facing difficulties in screening travelers crossing into South Sudan through many porous entry points along the border. Daniel Friday Martin has the story for VOA from Yei.
For the relative peace and stability Yei River State has been experiencing since the signing of last year's peace deal, thousands of people who sought refuge in DR Congo are voluntarily returning home. Sam Lomoro, a resident of Hanyakama suburb of Yei Town, says the problem is there are several porous entry points along the South Sudan DR border, putting Yei River State residents at particular risk of contracting the Ebola virus. Speaking in Arabic, Lomoro says the free movement of civilians and soldiers from Ariwara to Yei Town escalates the danger.
If the disease has reached Ariwara, the government should close all the several shortcut routes to Ariwara. There are 9 different illegal routes leading to Ariwara and Isebi. The soldiers are all South Sudanese and they must be screened at any entry point. We want seriousness in terms of protection against Ebola.
Lomoro says health officials and NGO employees working to prevent the spread of Ebola are concentrating on creating awareness about how the disease is spread only in urban areas like Ye Town. Charity Dure, a resident of the Haileben area, says authorities will take action against illegal poachers and traders who sell bush meat which could contain Ebola. Dore says, despite warnings against consuming bush meat, many people still sell it and eat it in a town.
We had cases of Ebola outbreak from a far away area and now it's very close to us and we are living in fear. The other bad things is that Ebola can be gotten from consumption of bush meat and yet consumption of bush meat is common by people in their areas.
Charity says local residents want to see stepped up screening at entry points into South Sudan. Ye Town resident Hillary Garrison is calling on the government to deploy health officials around the South Sudan DR border. Speaking in Arabic, Garrison says immigration officials will be controlling movement along common borders.
What we are demanding from the government is strict measures at the border lines. We want health personnel to screen people who are coming from DRC and going to DRC at the border areas, because if no control measures are taken, we are likely to die from Ebola.
Dr. James Wani, Director General of Ye River State Health Ministry, admits it's impossible for health officials to screen all travelers, many of whom use porous entry points along the border. But speaking in Arabic, he says the government and NGOs are ramping up Ebola prevention programs across the state.
There are very many shortcut routes, and it's difficult for us to step up control measures there. What we are doing now is to inform people that any person who comes from DRC should go for screening. We have radio and road drive awareness campaigns.
He says health ministry officials and NGOs have set up emergency isolation rooms and have a standby ambulance ready to respond to any suspected cases. Ye Town is 28 kilometers from the Aba crossing point at the South Sudan DR Congo border. Ye Town is 71 kilometers from the DRC's Ariwara's town, where one person died from the Ebola virus this past week. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Ye.
Still on health matters, Health Ministry and World Health Organization officials in Juba are encouraging people across the country to remain on high alert to the threat of Ebola virus. Officials from the two institutions say they are doing more to prevent the virus from crossing into South Sudan. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Makur Matur-Koryom, Undersecretary in the National Health Ministry, says the Ebola virus was 600 kilometers from the border of South Sudan a few months ago, but has since spread to an area 70 kilometers from the South Sudan border, and that has officials worried. While assuring South Sudanese there is no case of Ebola in the country so far, he says the health ministry has heightened its preparedness and response mechanisms to ensure a rapid response is in place and to protect people in case the deadly virus comes across the border.
It is still safe to go around your business as usual, to travel in and out of the country as according to your plans. But of course, there's a need also to remain vigilant in case of any case of Ebola that may cross into the country.
Koryom says health officials and NGOs launched an updated six-month preparedness plan last month to identify gaps in the program and to prioritize activities in areas along busy trading routes and border posts such as Kaya and the Nimule border. He says while preparedness activities were rolled out in South Sudan in January, funds for minimum basic packages at the state level are still lacking. Koryom says that may increase the vulnerability to contain a cross-border spread to South Sudan from neighboring countries. He says after an Ebola case was confirmed 40 miles from the South Sudan border, the government sent a South Sudan National Ebola Task Force to Kaya near the border with Uganda to step up prevention activities.
On the 3rd of July, that was Wednesday, a team from Juba arrived in Ye and is still on the ground at the moment. in Gaia to strengthen and heighten the activities leading up to the improved preparedness and prevention of infection, and also ensure that measures are in place to control any possible outbreak of the disease in the country in those high-stakes states.
Dr. Agatha Gracha, the officer in charge at the World Health Organization in South Sudan, confirms no Ebola case has been reported in the country. He says the WHO is working with the health ministry and has vaccinated 700 frontline health workers to prevent them from contracting the virus and is screening people entering South Sudan at border crossings.
In the event that this status change, then vaccines will be available at short notice, and even then it will be targeted towards the contacts and contacts of the contacts. So for now we are putting efforts in ensuring that the communities are educated, they are aware.
This week, a 40-year-old woman was reported to have died of Ebola at Aliwara town in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo and 70 kilometers from Kaya on the South Sudan border. Congolese health officials say the woman traveled 500 kilometers from Beni in Congo's North Kivu province. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
The U.S. government has banned the current Malawian Special Advisor on Parliamentary Affairs and former Minister of Home Affairs from visiting the United States due to his involvement in significant corruption. Lamek Masina reports for VOA from Blantyre.
Malawi's Anti-Corruption Bureau arrested Uladi Musa in 2017 alongside a senior immigration official on charges they fraudulently issued citizenship and passports to people from Burundi and Rwanda. Court documents show Musa committed the offense in 2013 when he was Minister of Home Affairs during the administration of former President Joyce Banda. Musa has denied the charges, but in a statement Wednesday, the U.S. State Department said it has credible information connecting Musa to corruption. Douglas Johnson is the public affairs officer at the U.S. Embassy in Malawi.
We have laws about that under Section 7031C of the Department of State Foreign Appropriations Act. It makes us required to designate him as a person of corruption.
The U.S. government also extended the travel ban to Musa's spouse, Cecilia. Neither will be allowed to enter U.S. territory. Speaking to VOA Thursday, Musa said he is surprised with how the U.S. government has handled the matter.
That's the way they handle issues of diplomacy. Could you tell the embassy to furnish me with that information, officially and diplomatically? Because I don't have any report of it. How do they know me? There are so many people who have got cases in court. Why only me?
Johnson said the ban was issued in Washington to a Malawian government, which he believes will communicate it to Musa. Political commentator Vincent Kondowe says the ban is a wake-up call for Malawi's government to address corruption.
What the U.S. government has done is an indirect message to the Malawi government that probably they're not doing enough in the fight against corruption. Remember that Ladi Musa is not just a junior public officer. He is a presidential advisor.
Kondowe said what the government could now do is to clear its image by removing Musa from his position until all court matters are resolved. Speaking to VOA, government spokesperson Mark Bottoman noted that the corruption scandal did not happen under the administration of the current president, Peter Mutharika. Bottoman said the government will monitor the situation before it reaches any decision on the matter. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Kenyan survivors of Garissa University attack in 2015 have welcomed Wednesday's life sentence imposed on one of the three men charged for killing 148 people. The other two men were given 41-year sentencing. Muhammad Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
On Wednesday, Kenya's chief magistrate court sentenced a Tanzanian man to life in prison in connection with the April 2, 2015 attack on Garissa University. Two Kenyans received sentences of 41 years. All three were convicted of playing supporting roles in the attack, for which Al-Shabaab militants claimed responsibility. The verdicts may be expected to bring closure to the survivors. However, two survivors who spoke to VOA say the sentences did no such thing. 25-year-old Elizabeth Wamboi survived the early morning attack. She continued her education afterward, but transferred to another university. Wamboi told VOA she has found it difficult to go on with her life, although she has forgiven those who killed her fellow students.
Only what I feel now is so much loss, but there's nothing I can do about it. I lost very close friends, a boyfriend, but I already forgive and moved on, because there's nothing much I can do.
Another survivor, Nicholas Odhiambo, says the verdicts had no effect on him.
I cannot say I was relieved because it had already happened and I lost a lot of my friends. There's nothing that could have been done to bring them back. I felt nothing, like, simply put, I felt nothing.
The university was closed for 9 months after the attack, but it reopened the following year and produced its first new graduates in June. Ahmed Ismail survived the deadly siege and graduated from the university. He says the students' will to get an education has defeated Al-Shabaab's terror threats.
Terrorism is a global problem. Just that Garissa University, we were unfortunate that they had targeted us. And you know, terrorists also have no rule. We have told terrorists, we've shown Kenya, we've shown Africa and the world at large that Garissa University will not fail, irrespective of who attacks. And who does what? We've carried ourselves from scratches, and now we are happy that we are graduates from the very university that terrorists wanted it closed.
The town of Garissa is about 200 kilometers from the Somali border and has in recent years been the site of sporadic attacks blamed on Al-Shabaab. The group has targeted Kenya for sending troops into Somalia to support the internationally recognized government. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Tengama by Congolese music star Fabregas.
Tengama! Tengama!
Well, those beats can prepare you for your weekend. We've been listening to Congolese music star Fabregas with the song Tengama. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Let us know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
DJ Miel de Paris, DJ Bombastic. DJ Philo, DJ Bronze 144.
Arme nos technologies number one. Weber et Koubalala.